This is Audible.
Gods come and gods go. Mortals flicker and flash and fade. Worlds don't last. Stars and galaxies are transient, fleeting things that twinkle like fireflies and vanish into cold and dust. But when the first living thing drew breath, he was there, waiting, with his siblings. The Endless. When the last living thing has left this universe, their task will be done. His realm is the dreaming, the world of sleep and imagination. He is Dream, Lord Morpheus, and he must learn to change or die.
The Sandman, an Audible original, produced in association with DC. From the DC publications, written by Neil Gaiman, dramatized and directed for audio by Dirk Max. Based on characters created by Neil Gaiman, Sam Keith, and Mike Drinkenberg. Sandman, Sleep of the Just.
June 1920. The office of the senior curator of the Royal Museum.
I, John Hathaway, state that this is a true and accurate testament of my conduct during the 4 years prior to this date. The 6th of June, 1920. I have used our shortage of staff during the Great War as an excuse to delay and obstruct the stocktaking of the museum's books and manuscripts for as long as I can. The war is over, and tomorrow the long overdue stock inspection will take place. It will reveal the absence of several key works from the museum's occult and magic collection, all unique. Not least the only surviving collection of spells, enchantments, and rituals designed to summon and bind death itself, the Magdalen Grimoire. The loss of these works is entirely due to my weakness, gullibility, and poor judgment. I have been a willing dupe of the self-styled occultist, wizard, and mage, Roderick Burgess. On the 6th of June, 1916, I arrived in London and from thence took the train south to Crowborough. There I hired a motor car to convey me to Burgess's estate at Witch Cross. My grief, following the recent loss of my son Edmund, the long journey south and the weight of the heavy book in my briefcase, induced a weary torpor in me.
Wake up, sir.
I must have dozed off. Is this it?
We're here. That's the front door.
Thank you, driver. Will you...
5 shillings extra to wait.
Yes, of course.
The front door of Witch Cross possesses a large door knocker. Hathaway has barely lifted it when the door is opened.
Oh.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Hathaway, Dr. John Hathaway. Can I, Is Mr. Burgess available?
The master is in his study, sir. Please, follow me. In here, sir.
Burgess's study is filled with arcana. Egyptian mummy cases, animal skeletons, a mummified hand, upon which each waxy blackened finger is formed into a candle. Hathaway briefly glimpses stuffed creatures in dark corners and runic carvings in the linen fold panelling. Across the ceiling, an intricate zodiac is painted with a sculpted goat's head suspended from its ceremonial arch. Before him, Burgess rises, a shaven-headed, fleshy man, from his writing table.
Dr. Hathaway, what an unexpected pleasure. Please, take a seat. Compton, some tea for our guest.
Sir.
So, I take it you have reconsidered?
After our meeting at the museum, I know what I said, but... My son, Edmund, I received a telegram. His destroyer was sunk last week. Off Jutland. He's dead.
I see. And is that the grimoire in your briefcase?
I brought you the book. I had to.
May I?
Of course. If what you were telling me was true...
Hmm?
It is true, isn't it? About death...
Quite true, Dr. Hathaway. The Magdalen Grimoire was all that our order needed.
And now you have it?
Yes. We can hold the ceremony at the next full moon. And then, no one need ever die again.
Toronto, Ontario, Canada, June 10th, 1916. 4 days later. Ellie Marston listens to her bedtime story.
Well... It's no use your talking about waking him, said Tweedledum, when you're only one of the things in his dream. You know very well you're not real.
Ellie knows the story is meant to entertain her.
I am real, said Alice, and began to cry.
It terrifies her. Kingston, Jamaica, that same night. In his father's inn, Daniel Bustamante sleeps. The shouts and songs of drunken adults do not shake his slumber. He dreams of a castle in the air above the Blue Mountains. A castle made of clouds. Verdun, France. Stefan Wasserman is part of tonight's attack on enemy trenches. As soon as it's dark, he will go over the top. He never dreamed it would be like this. Nobody told him. He lied about his age to enlist. He is almost 14. London, England. Unity Kincaid tosses between linen sheets. She dreams of a tall, dark man. His eyes burn like twin stars in her head. She mutters and whimpers. Lost in a world beyond her understanding, Unity dreams. And, in Witchcross, England, as he turns the pages of the Magdalen Grimoire, Roderick Burgess's waking dreams are of power and glory.
Yes. Yes.
And of death, of course. Especially death.
In my power.
It's midnight. It's time. The Order of Gavard.
Time. No one has even attempted what we will achieve tonight, Alex. To summon and imprison death. This will be a triumph for the Order.
Yes, Father.
Father!
Magus.
After tonight, I'd like to see Alistair and his friends try to make fun of me. They'll make no more jokes, Alex, when death is at my command. Poor Hathaway. Even if we fail tonight, my son, Hathaway gave us the book. He'll be mine forever, and the Royal Museum will be ours to plunder. Poor old fool.
Everything is ready for the ceremony, Magus.
Thank you, Sykes. To your places, acolytes. Let us begin.
For a moment, Roderick Burgess is afraid. He thinks of the effrontery of his action, actually to capture death, to bind the Reaper. For a moment, he hesitates, but only for a moment.
I give you coin I made from stone. I give you a song I stole from the dirt. I give you a knife from under the hills. A stick that I stuck through a dead man's eye. I give you a claw that I ripped from a rat. I give you a name, and the name is lost. I give you the blood from out of my vein, and the feather I pulled from an angel's wing.
The words of the spell toll like muffled funeral bells inside Burgess's head. He could not stop now, even if he wanted to. The disciples surround a circle marked out on the cellar floor, its black border decorated with runic script. A dark, swirling mist begins to form over it.
I call you with names, O my Lord, O my Lord. I summon with poison and summon with pain. I open the way and I open the gates. Come. Ashima Diva calls you. Marbarim calls you. Horvendael calls you. From the dark they call you. Into the dark they call you. Coin and song, knife and stick, claw and name, blood and feather. Here in darkness! Here in darkness!
Here in darkness! Here in darkness! Here in darkness!
Here in darkness we summon you together!
The unconscious figure lies on the cold cellar floor. He is wrapped in a black robe, decorated with embroidered flames. Upon his head is a helmet. Strange, insectoid, with blank, circular eyes. Its hose-like snout curls down his chest like the backbone of some ancient creature. From a chain at his neck hangs a heavy ruby. His hands are gloved, and a leather pouch lies just beyond their reach.
Magus! It's him.
No, Sykes. This isn't death. We have failed.
Shh! The mage knows.
Damn it to hell! Even so.
Father, should you go near him?
Quiet, boy. We'll have the ruby, the helm, and the pouch. Yes. I think at the end of the day, this would have been a very profitable evening's work.
And? Now what do we do?
We ensure our guest cannot leave. Fetch the crystal cell, Sykes. Have the brethren seal our guest inside it before he recovers.
Yes, Magus.
Now, all around the world, something has shifted. In Toronto, the next day.
Ellie? Oh, drat the girl.
Ellie Marston slumps over her book at the breakfast table for the third time this morning.
Can you believe it, Arthur? She's fallen asleep again.
She must have woke too early. I'll take her up.
Her father carries her back to bed, but Ellie will never wake up. The following night in Kingston, Jamaica, Daniel Bustamante wants to revisit his best dream, the castle made of clouds. But this time, the clouds are flimsy, frail, less real.
Huh? No. No.
And then the clouds aren't there at all. Too scared to sleep, he sobs to keep himself awake until dawn. The days pass. On the Western Front, doctors examine a soldier who seems to have lost his mind amid the horror of trench warfare.
Stefan, why does he just stare?
Stefan Wasserman's case is new to them. They thought they'd seen every form of shell shock.
I can't give him any more morphine. It would kill him.
That face, like a silent scream.
How long can a boy go without sleeping? When do the nightmares sneak out into the daylight?
Oh, it's so sad.
Stefan Wasserman went over the top. Unity Kincaid finds it harder and harder to stay awake. She now sleeps for almost 20 hours a day. She used to dream, to shift in her sleep, muttering and sighing, locked in half-remembered fantasies. Now she lies unmoving, breath shallow and silent. Lost to the world, Unity sleeps. In the cellar vault of the Witchcross house, Roderick Burgess's hostage, not death after all, is now awake. He crouches inside his prison cell, a lead crystal half-sphere which has been welded to the cellar floor. In the hours following the summoning, he has been stripped of his robes, the helm, ruby, and pouch of sand, which are the instruments of his power, and his dignity. His naked flesh is marble white under a shock of black hair.
Trapped.
His eyes burn silver like stars set in their pitch-dark sockets, gazing upon the two burly figures outside the dome who guard the cellar entrance. He knows these functionaries are merely his jailers. Neither is his captor.
Observe.
Who is it?
It's Burgess.
And Alex.
He's awake, Master.
The captive watches an older man enter, tall and powerfully built. The head is shaven, the features large and ill-favored. The eyes are hooded and watchful. This must be the mage who caused the summoning. At his side is a boy of not more than 16 summers, trembling slightly. The mage approaches the edge of the imprisoning circle.
Welcome. As you see, the circle traps you incorporeally. The crystal cell imprisons your material aspect. You won't get out unless the circle is broken. And the circle will not be broken unless I order it.
Threats.
In due course, we will discuss the conditions of your release. Watch him closely, you two. And whatever you do, stay awake.
Yes, Mage.
Patience.
June 1920. The Great War is 2 years in the past.
Museum scandal latest. Treasures looted. Senior curator comes under suspicion.
You're a bastard, Roderick Burgess. And I was a fool. I was a fool to think you could bring back Edmund. I was a fool to have given you that damned book. You've bled me dry. But you can't blackmail me any longer. To my shame, I know too much about you. That is why I have written a suicide note. It's all here. All I know. If you're lucky, they'll only hang you. You'll ruin no more lives. I cannot bear my life any longer. Damn you to hell, Burgess. And alas, I am certain you will meet me there.
Hathaway's body is discovered in a pool of congealed blood, impaled on a ceremonial knife. Beside it are the burned scraps of a note. It is impossible to read.
Fool. As if I would have allowed him to leave any evidence.
Quiet, please. In the matter of the death of Professor John Hathaway, this court finds no evidence linking Hathaway to Roderick Burgess and his Order of Ancient Mysteries. As nothing can be proven, Mr. Burgess is cleared of any involvement in Professor Hathaway's death, which this court determines as being self-inflicted.
Extra edition, main headline. Scandal rocks occult community. Demon King cleared due to lack of evidence. Sub-headline, the Lord Magus and his Order of Ancient Mysteries. Nothing proven. The self-styled Demon King refuses to comment. The figure who was alleged to be at the center of the scandal involving the death, no. The bizarre suicide of museum curator John Hathaway is Roderick Burgess, born Maurice Burgess Brocklesby in Preston, Lancashire in 1872. During the turn of the century, Mr. Burgess used his considerable inherited industrial wealth to set up a mystical organisation, the Order of Ancient Mysteries, based in Thorny Rig, a Sussex manor house. In 1916, Mr. Burgess announced widely in occult circles that he would raise and imprison death, proving himself as the greatest magician of his day. Whatever the truth of what occurred in Witch Cross in 1916, and it is doubtful anyone will ever know for sure, one thing is certain. It was a significant turning point for Burgess and his Order of Ancient Mysteries.
Oi, George, what are you on?
Just typing up the Burgess story.
Yeah, look, I need another 500 words on the sleepy sickness. Toot sweet.
Is that a story now? I'd spiked it.
BMA says it could overtake the flu epidemic. The headline should talk about tragedy. Warped minds and broken bodies, something like that. Well, crack on, there's a good chap.
Oh, Struth, all right. Mr. Burgess' mistress, Ethel Cripps, denied that his early efforts to win himself notoriety were greeted with scorn by other so-called magicians.
Encephalitis lethargica, the sleepy sickness, as it was called, began in 1916 and spread. People fell asleep and did not wake up. They lived their lives like sleepwalkers, eating if fed, sometimes talking nonsense, dream stuff. Psychic residue from the World War, some suggested. Others, doctors and scientists, more sensibly, attributed it to a virus. In a German graveyard, only a broken wooden cross marks the life of Stefan Wassermann. Unable to sleep, Stefan killed himself a year after his discharge from the army. He was 16. It is now August 1926. In the cellars under Roderick Burgess's manor house, a stalemate endures.
Say something!
The captive's penetrating gaze calmly takes in the pallid, sweaty countenance of his captor.
Stop staring at me with those blasted eyes!
It is one thing to have summoned him, another to make him obey.
I'll find a way, Sykes. I'll find a way. Come.
Yes, Magus.
You two, stay awake.
Yes, Magus.
Alex Burgess is now a young adult. He sits in his father's study, leafing through one of the dusty, crumbling books that Hathaway stole.
But these are not gods.
Bugger and blast him! I know he understands me. 10 years in that goldfish bowl and he hasn't said a word! Just stares at me with those creepy eyes of his. He hates us, damn him!
Oh, a new portrait of Ethel.
Father Magus, I found something that may cast some light on our guest in the Paganarum Fulvarum. Look at this picture.
Hmm? Oh, yes.
I think this is him.
Indeed. So do I.
You knew already?
Process of deduction. Sykes, leave Ethel's photograph. Look here. Alex has found it.
What is it, young man?
The figure in this woodcut is wearing a helmet very like the one the Magus appropriated from our guest.
Yes.
You're right. This is the being we summoned. But which?
He had to be one of the Endless, so which one? Not death, we knew that. Destiny, then? Desire? No, dream was the only one that fitted the bill. Why do you think that I ordered that none of the guards were to sleep?
Because, presumably, that would give him power over them?
Precisely, Ruthen.
Dream. Lord Morpheus.
I was hoping you'd work it out on your own, my boy, and you have. Well done. Now I know that the Order will be safe in your hands. If ever I forsake the material plane. Hey, Ruthen?
Yes, Magus. We'll be honored to serve Alex as we have served you.
And yet, in November 1930, not altogether surprisingly, a schism brings chaos to the Order of Ancient Mysteries.
Magical war has been declared. Ruthen Sykes, second in command to Roderick Burgess, has absconded, taking with him many of the treasures of the Order of Ancient Mysteries. In the company of Ethel Cripps, Burgess's mistress, who was famously quoted as being his devoted slave in love. Rumours abound that they have also taken over £200,000 in cash. Sykes and Cripps are thought to have crossed the Atlantic and thence travelled to San Francisco in California. Close associates in the Order claim that Burgess has threatened vengeance upon them both.
San Francisco, December 1930. Ethel Cripps is visiting her doctor. Around her neck, she wears the ruby that Burgess stole from Dream. Ethel has discovered she is pregnant. Whether by Roderick Burgess or Ruthven Sykes, she cannot be sure. Back in their hotel room, Sykes has equally urgent matters to attend to. He needs an ally to protect him against Burgess's occult weapons. As no human agency can provide this, Sykes must summon darker forces.
And Lord of Flies, make yourself manifest. Ah, sire.
You have summoned me. What is your request?
I beg protection, Lord.
Protection comes dear, mortal. The things you offer are paltry trifles. Have you nothing else?
Yes, sir.
Sykes picks up and proffers another of the treasures he stole from Burgess, who in turn stole it from the Lord of Dreams. It is the helmet Morpheus was wearing when he was cast into Burgess's trap.
Perhaps this helmet, sire.
Yes. For this I would give you what you ask. So splendid.
The helmet is accepted, and in return the demon manifests a protective charm. It appears to be a human eyeball on a gold chain. Sykes takes it with trembling hands.
This amulet will protect you from anything.
Thus it is that over the next few years, Roderick Burgess makes several unsuccessful attempts to wreak revenge upon Sykes. As his power is constrained, he grows older and more feeble. Alex becomes his father's closest confidant and assistant.
Here, Father Magus.
As this blood is shed, so spills your blood, Ruthven Sykes, adept of the 33rd, whose secret name is Ararita, traitor and oathbreaker!
Can you sense any change? Did it work?
The ritual proved useless. Again, he still has protection. Verminous oaf.
What about our prisoner? Couldn't we make him do something to Sykes?
He can't make the Lord of Dreams do anything, Alex. No, we keep him down in the cellar, and we hope.
Try to raise death again.
Cretin. We can get Sykes if we just keep trying. Something will change.
In 1936, something does change. Ethel Cripps walks out on Sykes.
Taxi!
Where to, ma'am?
Ferdon Townsend, railroad station.
Yes, ma'am.
Ethel still wears Dream's ruby around her neck and has smuggled out the demon's protective gift of an eyeball on a bracelet. It is the amulet that has kept Sykes from Burgess's reach.
Yes.
Father, what is it?
He is mine. I can feel it.
She wouldn't take it. It must still be here.
While Sykes owned the amulet, it kept him safe. When he still possessed it, it was worth everything.
No! Oh God, no!
6 years of curses and magical weapons at last find their target. And Sykes's head explodes. July 1939. Ellie Marston is in a charity ward. She's still asleep. She has woken twice in the last decade. Each time she cried for her mother, she still thinks she is 8 years old. In Jamaica, Daniel Bustamante was one of the last people to succumb to sleep sickness at the end of 1926. He's now been asleep for 13 years. His wife and children miss him. London, England. Unity Kincaid was raped 7 years ago, perpetrator unknown. She gave birth to a baby girl. The scandal was hushed up. The baby was adopted. Unity never knew. She'd slept through the whole thing. Burgess's hostage remains sealed in the crystal dome under the manor house. The universe knows someone is missing, and slowly it attempts to replace him. A New York alley, 1939.
What are you doing, Velma?
Velma Ralston is late for her shift as a drinks hostess at the Coconut Grove nightclub. It's not a good time to be taking this shortcut through the city.
Hey, lady. There I was, looking for a little company. And here you are.
Velma's attacker thinks they are alone.
Get away from me.
Oh, come here, come on.
They are not.
Now you're gonna have to be a lot friendlier than that.
Don't touch me.
Come here.
Get off me.
Leave her alone.
Huh? Wesley Dodd's nightmares have stopped since he started going out in his costume at night.
Beat it, weirdo.
I said, leave her alone.
It's not much of a costume. A green business suit, fedora, a World War I gas mask, and a gas gun.
Oh, please help me, mister.
Take a hike. Take the mask with you.
Oh, I need this. Hold your breath, miss.
Why'd she need to...
Five, four, three, two, one. The air's clear again. You can breathe, miss.
Is he dead?
No, the gas gun has no harmful effects. He'll nap till the police get here.
Oh, okay.
Friendly word of advice. Mm-hmm. Stay out of these alleys at night.
Who are you? You're not gonna hurt me, are you?
Oh, ma'am, I assure you, the innocent have nothing to fear from the Sandman.
Okay.
Now you should leave.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And for you, pal, a little souvenir.
Wesley Dodds puts evil people to sleep with gas, then sprinkles sand on them, leaving them for the police to find in the morning. The idea came to Wesley in his sleep. But this wasn't like one of his occasionally prophetic dreams. This felt like a visitation. These days, though, Wesley doesn't dream about the man in black robes, with the burning eyes in dark sockets under the shock of black hair. Everything's changed since he took on the mantle of a character he likes to call the Sandman.
Hey, you! That's not your purse.
How do you know?
Because it doesn't match your shoes.
Wesley has decided to keep doing this for as long as he feels he's filling a gap, restoring some kind of balance. Because when he gets home, after a night of fighting crime, Wesley Dodds finds he can sleep the sleep of the just. Eight years pass. It is 1947. Roderick Burgess is ailing and broken. But he has made Alex, now middle-aged, bring him back down to the cellar door behind which the Lord of Dreams is held in his glass cell.
Father, do you think this is wise? At your age?
My age? I'll be so bloody insolent. Open the damn door.
The white, naked figure inside the domed glass cell raises his head to see them enter. His eyes burn as steadily as ever. His shock of hair is still jet black, despite the years he has been held here.
You. It's your fault. You. Damn you. You are death, but you live forever. You haven't aged a day since we caught you.
You could have given me power beyond my wildest dreams. I didn't... I didn't have to get so old. I shouldn't have had to get old.
Father!
I have watched my captor grow old and die.
Just breathe! Father!
There is no satisfaction in his death. I am still here, in the prison he made for me. I am Dream of the Endless, still waiting.
Nurse?
Oh, coming, Ellie.
1955. In Toronto, Ellie Marston is formally diagnosed as suffering from encephalitis lethargica. She now wakes 4 or 5 times a year. She wants someone to read her a story.
Ellie, you're awake.
Can you read me Alice through the...
Poor kid.
In Jamaica, Daniel Bustamante is awake much of the time. He doesn't speak, though. The superstitious say he is a zombie, a walking dead man. If he spoke, he might agree with them. Something died inside him a long time ago. A castle made of clouds.
Finish with that newspaper, Agnes.
Have it, Bert. I'm sick of reading about this Suez business. Bloody NASA.
Bloody Eden. I'm sick of this ruddy government warlike.
When her parents died, the family executors had Unity Kincaid put into a nursing home. They have to explain where she is every time she asks. She never remembers. Around her, the elderly wait for death, as they'd wait for an old friend. Killing time. In the grounds of Forney Rig, moss gathers in the pagan runes on Roderick Burgess's gravestone. Alex Burgess is now over 50. Since his father's death, he has made a particular friend. Paul Maguire is in his 20s. He came to Forney Rig as a gardener. He is now Alex's secretary and lover. Paul helps Alex to take care of what is left of the Order of Ancient Mysteries, the property, and the unhappy guest in the cellar.
Alex, dear heart, I still don't understand why you keep him down there.
What else can I do?
But what if the police found out? He's kidnapped.
Oh, don't be foolish, Paul. I've told you. He's been down there for 40 years without eating, without sleeping. I don't think he can even breathe in that glass cage. He is a being of unknowable power, so what do I do? Say sorry, it was all Father's fault. Look me up the next time you're incarcerated on the physical plane. The Order isn't just a way to make money and get laid, Paul. Some of it is for real. I've seen stuff you'd never believe, things that still scare me. Nightmare things. We're safer just leaving him down there. I'll be dead long before he ever gets out. It'll be somebody else's problem.
If you say so. You've been around a lot longer than I have.
Don't rub it in.
Game of tennis?
Not now. Sorry. I'm too tired.
All right. I'll pop into town. That was me last ciggy.
See you later.
Mr. Burgess?
Yes, I'm alone.
How is he today? Blowed if we can ever tell. Just sits there, staring out through the glass with those eyes of his.
Mm. Hello? You don't have to be in there, you know. The deal is still the same one that my father offered you. Power, immortality, a promise that you won't seek revenge. Well, I know you can understand me.
say something.
No.
It's now 1968. The young people come to Alex, seeking enlightenment.
Is this really it?
Forney Rigg said so on the gate.
Hello, hello.
Here he is.
Are you the young friends who telephoned last night?
Are you Alex Burgess?
I am. Come in.
Come on, guys.
Alexander Burgess tells them of Kundalini yoga, tantric sex, astral travel, nothing important. He forbids them to use psychedelics in the house, worried that the waking dreams could somehow empower the prisoner in the cellar. He won't let them call him Magus to his face. It's Alex, always Alex. Ellie continues to sleep, moved to a Toronto hospital specializing in encephalitis cases. There are many like her. People for whom the sands of time stopped flowing half a century earlier.
Oh, look at that poor boy. No one can help him.
Daniel sleepwalks, unspeaking, through his world. He moves slowly, like a man wading through quicksand.
There you go, love. Look, everybody's watching the telly. You like that? No? Well, I can sit you outside if you prefer. Yes? All right, then.
In the nursing home, the staff pretend that Unity is awake. They wheel her from room to room with the other patients. Asleep, she watches television. Asleep, she relaxes in the sun. There are two guards in the cellar of Forney Rigg, 24 hours a day, watching the Lord of Dreams in his glass cell.
Jeff?
What?
I need to drop another tab.
Bloody hell, Kev, you'll be bouncing off the walls.
Coffee and amphetamines are freely available to them. The guards never sleep on duty. 1970. The young people have drifted away. Alex visits his father's grave daily, lost in thought.
Roderick Burgess. Not dead, just sleeping. Would that you were awake for 5 minutes, Father, and we could talk.
Popping into the village. You want anything, love?
Paul, no. Drive safely.
Absolutely, sweetheart.
Alex has handed over the reins of the organization his father founded to Paul Maguire, his lover. Paul doesn't believe in magic. He sees the Order of Ancient Mysteries as an efficient method of parting the credulous from their cash. Alex spends most of his time in his father's, now his, study, under a painting of the late Magus, which gazes down judgmentally upon him. Alex wrote a memoir about his father, writes letters to newspapers defending his father's reputation, and he is editing a volume of his father's letters. One night, something snaps in him. He slashes his father's portrait with a knife. Alex will no longer read books on magic, except for one, the Liber Fulvarum Paginarum, and he only reads one page of that book.
Dream of the Endless.
He reads that page over.
The Endless.
And over.
The Endless! No.
It is 1972.
Why won't you talk to me? You could tell us so much. So many things.
1978.
I haven't had a decent night's sleep for 60 years. Is that your doing? Is it?
1982.
Well. I could torture you, you know. I could. Don't think that I couldn't. I've killed people before now.
1988.
I hate you. I'm glad we trapped you. You're nothing special. You know that. You're nothing at all. I may be on a wheelchair, but you are just a naked man in a glass box. That's all you are. Nothing at all.
Soon.
Pointless. Quite pointless. Take me up to my office, Paul. I have work to attend to.
Yes, Alex.
I do have work, don't I? Don't I?
Of course you do, love. Of course you do.
Don't humor me, Paul. I can't stand it when you humor me.
Boy, the old band's in a strop today, Fred. Bloody shift's hardly started.
Just read your Stephen King.
I finished it. Anything good in the paper?
No, same old rubbish. Don't know why I buy it. Force of habit, I suppose. That and the birds on page 3.
Yeah, well, I'll be in Mallorca this time next week, so there'll be plenty of the real thing. You know, the kind of Eiffel you never get at the beach at Eastbourne.
Like you could pull one of these, Ernie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I could have done with a couple of hours more kip last night, mind.
Don't you bloody doze off on me.
Oh, sorry, mate. I once met this blonde buying a choc ice.
Another of your bloody conquest stories?
I'll just remember it quietly, then. Just let have 5 minutes. You go on in for a bit, and then we'll swap.
You bugger. Flipping heck.
The guard named Ernest is remembering a holiday, but as his eyes droop, the Spanish beach becomes a tropical paradise.
It begins.
Straight out of a holiday brochure. Sun, sea, sand, and surf, and sand.
Guys, what was that?
It's him, in the glass bowl. He just keeled over. He was staring like always. Then you dozed off and he just went.
Bloody hell. Look at him.
You don't think he's dead?
I don't know what to think. What the hell do we do now?
Well, they won't think it's our fault, will they? We didn't do nothing.
Wait here. I'll get Maguire.
Dead? I bet he's finally dead.
How long's he been like this?
10 minutes.
I suppose we ought to take a look at him.
He's never done anything like this before.
My one chance.
Mind you, he's never ate nothing. Can't be any oxygen in there after all these years.
I have waited so long for one of them to succumb, to afford me an opportunity.
Where did all the mess in there come from?
I must not waste what I could collect from his brief visit to my realm.
Looks like sand.
That's funny. I was thinking about a beach.
Give me the key to the cell door.
Shouldn't we ask Mr. Burgess?
Just give it to me.
What do we do?
Stand by here while I go in there and see if he's alive.
Are you sure?
Shut up. Hello?
Hang on. He's up.
No.
Helen, damnation!
The Lord of Dreams raises his cupped hand, filled with sand.
No!
He blows it. With delicate aim and considerable force over his captors. They fall asleep where they were standing.
At last, finally. It has been too long, but I have bound their dreams, opened a way into the dreaming. I am free.
And Morpheus leaves the world of mortals to return to his rightful realm.
All right.
Oh, what happened?
Oi, where did he go?
Who? No.
Oh, God.
No!
Home. It feels so good to be back.
This dark emptiness is the space between the varied and shifting continents, archipelagos, and skerries of dreams. A limbo in which scraps of sleeping thought and imagination swirl and flutter.
I left a monarch, yet I return naked, alone, hungry.
Dream is enfeebled by his long exile. He cannot travel far.
First, food.
It takes all his strength to clutch at a passing dream.
Oh no, not again.
This is Mort Notkin's recurring dream. In it, he goes to this swell party, but he's dressed as a clown. He thought it was a costume party. He didn't know. Everyone laughs at him. Marilyn, Elvis, even the Duke.
You're one hell of a cut-up, Pilgrim.
Just trying to make you laugh, Mr. Wayne.
That'll be the day.
Excuse me.
Hey!
My first food in 70 years.
Who's the naked guy raiding the buffet?
That's a new twist.
Dream stuffs himself with finger rolls, vol-au-vents, and savory bites.
I'm so hungry,
I don't even taste it.
Sated, he steps out of Mort's dream.
I found food, but I'm still weak, lacking my tools and the means to clothe myself. But wait, I imagine the texture of the fabric against my skin. I sculpt it from dream space. It has been so long. There.
Morpheus, a figure in the grey world of half-sleep, stands clad in black shirt, black breeches, black boots, and a commodious floor-length black coat.
That is two of three. I have food and raiment. Now I need the tools stolen from me by my former captor. He will give them to me, and he will give the other thing I crave. Revenge.
All over the world, they begin to wake up. In Toronto.
Why, you're only a sort of a thing in his dream.
Ellie?
If that there king was to wake, added Tweedledum, you'd go out. Bang! Just like a candle.
Sister, Ellie Marston's woken up.
In Jamaica.
You look at this man. He's crazy.
You sure?
Just sits there all day. He can't talk. He's crazy.
No. Not anymore.
In the nursing home garden, Unity Kincaid comes to herself again.
My baby.
Miss Kincaid?
I dreamt I had a baby.
And in the upstairs hallway at Forney Rig Manor.
15 down, torpidity, repose, 5 letters.
Nurse Edmonds, I need to talk to Alex. Something's come up, something important.
I'm afraid you'll have to wait, Mr. Maguire. He's having a nap.
Well, let me know the minute he wakes up.
Alex Burgess sleeps. And as he sleeps, he dreams that he is awake, rising to stand in a long wood-paneled corridor in some ancient house. Or perhaps a castle. The walls are hung with mirrors of all shapes. And as he walks, Alex looks at himself.
I am younger and younger with each looking glass.
At the darker end of the corridor is a wax-encrusted side table, a black candle burning in a holder upon its top. At the table's base is something dark.
No, just a shadow. Dancing in the light cast by the candle. It's a cat.
It is. A large, black, magisterial cat. It unwinds itself and pads silently off into the gloom of a side passage.
It bids me follow.
He picks up the candle and follows the cat. It climbs a circular staircase set into a stone tower.
This is not Forney Rig.
Alex, now barely 20 years of age, follows the cat up the steps. At their apex is a door into a small chamber. The cat pushes the door ajar, stepping delicately inside.
I meant to follow. That must be it.
On the far side of the small chamber is a high chair of black wood. carved so ornately it might almost be a throne. The cat sits upon it and stares at Alex with eyes like stars dropped into pools of black pitch. Alex blinks, and the cat is no longer sitting in the chair. It is now Morpheus, the Lord of Dreams, who sits and gazes upon him.
You aren't talking. What's the matter?
But,
Cat, got your tongue?
You. It's you.
Quite correct. It's me.
I'm sorry. It wasn't me. My father, he imprisoned you. I never knew. I wouldn't have. I'm sorry. I didn't...
Enough. There are offences that are unpardonable. Can you have any idea what it was like? Can you have any idea? Confined in a glass dome for 80 years, a human lifetime. Time moves no faster for my kind than it does for humanity. In that prison, it crawled at a snail's pace. I am the Lord of this realm of dream and nightmare. You, your father, wrenched me away with a petty hedge-magicking tupney spell. Me. You did that to me. You barred me from my realm with your foolish circle. Well, have you no excuse? No explanation? Some reason I should not take reprisal.
We didn't want you. It was all a mistake. We weren't trying to capture you. We wanted to capture death.
You wanted death?
Mm-hmm.
Then count yourself lucky for the sake of your species and your petty planet that you did not succeed. That instead you snared Death's younger brother. You'll never know how lucky you were. Where are my tools?
Sorry?
A pouch, a helm, a ruby. Your people stole them from me. Where are they?
I don't know. That was part of the stuff Sykes stole 50 years ago. We never saw any of it again.
I see. So... your punishment, then.
You'll kill me.
No. No, no. I will grant you a gift to reward you for your years of hospitality. I give you this eternal waking.
What?
Alex Burgess is in his bed, asleep.
Oh, no!
He is an old man again. His partner, Paul, has been watching over him as he sleeps.
Are you all right?
Yes. Sorry. I must have had a nightmare.
You've been out like a light for hours, tossing and turning.
Paul, I dreamed that our prisoner had escaped in this... tower, it was, he said.
Yes, he did.
For a split second, in Alex's tortured mind, Paul's face is chalk white, with eyes like stars under a shock of black hair.
He's out, Alex. He
checked out this morning.
Keep away from me!
Oh, dear.
Nurse, I think Alex is delusional.
Now then, Mr. Burgess... calm down. You've had a bad dream, that's all. No point getting all worked up about it.
Oh, God, it was terrifying, so real. Have you ever had one of those dreams? You know, where you think you've woken up, but you haven't. It was just part of the nightmare, and you're still in it.
The nurse moves towards him. Nothing about her is reassuring.
I can't say I have, dear. But you know what?
Her head tears itself from her shoulders and thumps onto the bed between his legs, staring up at him.
I think you're going to be having quite a lot of them from now on.
It was more tiring than I had expected. But he will never return to the life he knew. His is the nightmare everlasting. Eternal waking.
How long has he been like this?
He's only been asleep a few minutes, if that's what you mean. Funny. He's normally such a light sleeper.
To Paul and the nurse, Alex Burgess is lost in the deepest sleep. Unreachable.
Alex? Alex, it's me, Paul. Come on, Alex. Come on, old fella. Look, me and Nurse Edmund.
But in his dreams, Alex Burgess is eternally awake in a world of nightmare.
We're here, Alex. It's all right. Wake up. Please, wake up. Please.
I have shown him fear in a handful of dust.
This dark, misty graveyard lies within the borders of the realm of Morpheus. Around it, shifting islands of dream country drift, scraps of imagination through which sleeping mortals briefly pass. But there are also permanent residents. Lesser gods, mythic creatures, and unworldly souls dwell here. Even before the Lord of Dreams was abducted, his nebulous domain was seldom a paradise. The two sharp-roofed, black-gabled houses you see beyond the gravestones over there, a house of secrets and a house of mystery, might well have sprung from the darkest of nightmares, and their inhabitants live a constant cycle of rebirth and death.
Don't be a moronic lump of blubbering, quaking, pathetic lard. Open the box, unwrap it.
But it isn't my birthday.
Of course it isn't your birthday, powder brain. You don't have a birthday.
No, I don't.
So, open it.
You promise it isn't gonna explode. Promise.
Now, why would I give you an exploding present? What kind of brother would I be if I did that?
My kind of brother, Kane. The kind who kills me whenever he's mad at me or bored or just in a lousy mood.
Let's let fraternal bygones be bygones, eh, Pudgy? Now just open your blasted present. What was that?
I think it's someone at the door. Well, some thing at the door anyway.
Well, let's see.
Don't you think we ought to wait for a while? Maybe it'll go away on its own.
Shut up, Abel. Who's out there? Who is it? It's only Gregory.
Well, maybe it's only really something pretending to be Gregory, something big and nasty.
Don't be pathetic. Why would something big and nasty pretend to be Gregory? But just to be on the safe side, you can open the door.
Sitting patiently outside the front door, like a huge green scaly dog, is Gregory. He is a gargoyle the size of a small dragon, which is to say that, even seated, he towers over Cain and Abel.
Now, come to think of it, I suppose Gregory is extraordinarily big and nasty-looking in his own right. It is Gregory, isn't it?
Yes, but what?
Abel's confusion is caused by what is gripped by Gregory's huge jaw. dangling like a rescued puppy, a barely recognizable figure droops under a shock of black hair.
Spit it out, gully guts. What is it?
It's him, brother. He's back. The prince of stories.
Gregory opens his mouth. The unconscious body of Morpheus, Lord of Dreams, falls onto the doorstep.
Help me. Please.
The Sandman.